Hour number two, Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Happy Saturday, Nashville. Welcome in. We've got a best deal for you. Nashville's best deal this week is River Queen Voyages. River Queen Voyages is the most fun and a unique way to see the downtown skyline from the water. Get half off a $50 gift card while they last at thegamenashville.com/deals. You want to avoid all that CMA traffic? Go on one of these and you can watch all the action on the river. I think
they got little booze cruises for 16 people. Like get a group together. Go take a booze cruise. Look at the skyline. Look at Broadway. I mean, it looks like a lot of fun. We've already been talking about when we might have to plan something like that.
Yeah, Junie's like, we need to get our friend group together, Michelle. Yeah. How many people we got on the list? Also, tune in for National Sounds Baseball tonight, 5:35 on 94.9 The Fan. The Sounds take on the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. It is my favorite name in all of sports, the Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp. AAA affiliate of the Miami Marlins. Their series will wrap up tomorrow at 1:05 p.m. Sounds Baseball on 94.9 The Fan, presented by 312 Pizza Company, Farm Bureau Health Plans, and Family Leisure. Discussing the SEC football scheduling and the SEC electing to not move to 9 conference games, and then also Oklahoma and Texas will be moving into the SEC as of 2024. We want to get your thoughts on the text line and on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. Junie, I came in today and you said, Michelle, I have a solution. And I'm like, a solution to what? And then you're like, you got to look at this. And I was running a little late. You know, we got about 5 minutes till showtime, but 5 minutes is game time, right? And you pull up on your laptop. I love giving a little behind, opening the curtain to see what really goes on to make this show what it is, Junie.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a fully thought out way that the SEC could, you know, do their scheduling moving forward. We talked so much about pods and, you know, what could that look like? Would they have a rotational and then they would have some, you know, rivalries kept intact? But I will give you the floor to explain the Junie Riddle algorithm on how the SEC should move forward. So, Greg Sankey, I hope you are listening.
All right. Everybody knows how much I love the NFL. And so, with Oklahoma and Texas coming in to the SEC, it gives you a nice 16-team conference. Woo. And listen, I understand this is going to be really out there. And this might be really different. People might not like this, but I think it makes sense for me. So I have put all 16 teams into 4 different divisions. Okay. So let's start with the West. I put these teams in the West because these are all former Big 12 schools.
Okay.
So Missouri, Texas, Oklahoma, and A&M. It brings back rivalries. And now, and I also want to preface that with these teams being in divisions, they're going to play each other every year. So that way that these 4 schools in each division, I put rivalries in there to make sure that all of these schools keep those traditions going. So Missouri, Texas, Oklahoma, and Texas A&M is the West division. The South division will be Florida, Georgia, Ole Miss, and Mississippi State. Okay? The Midwest division is going to be Alabama, Auburn, LSU, and Arkansas.
Okay.
And then the final division in the East will be Kentucky, Tennessee, South Carolina, and Vanderbilt. All right? So the way the NFL does it in the AFC and the NFC is that each division is on a rotation and they match up with each other every 3 years. So every 3 years you are going to play each division, right? So that leaves you with 7 SEC games a year. So this also leaves a little bit of wiggle room to put in 1 rivalry game per year. So with that being said, that gives you the option of adding 1 rival per team. So for instance, you know, Georgia and Auburn, they were never in the same division, but that is the oldest rivalry in all of college football. Not a lot of people realize that. But Georgia and Auburn are really close because Auburn, that is in Alabama, is only about 15 minutes from the Georgia-Alabama border.
Oh,
so
really?
So it's very close. So that rivalry is very historic. So, like, for instance, I put Georgia and Auburn as each other's rivals. So even though they're not in the same division, they will still play each other on a yearly basis.
Okay.
This is going to upset some people.
I know what it is. And it was the first thing I said when I saw your...
It was the first thing you noticed.
It's crazy.
It is crazy because, listen, Tennessee's rival I put as Florida. I put so that they play and continue to play Florida every single year.
Cover your ears, Robbie Stanley, if you're listening.
I know, because Robbie, obviously, I know his dad is an Alabama fan. And yeah. They enjoy that rivalry every year. It just hasn't been a rivalry. And again, that could come back. Mine could change. Maybe we could switch that up a little bit. But and this is all subject.
Tentative, yeah.
But listen, when you have four-team divisions, and you keep those rivalries, like Alabama and Auburn are in the same division, Ole Miss and Mississippi State are in the same division, Florida, Georgia, the old Big 12 schools that have moved over to the SEC, you kind of renew those rivalries and make sure you keep Texas and Oklahoma together, Tennessee, Kentucky, and all those. It still leaves some rivalries out.
You can't keep them all.
You can't keep them all. So, again, if they're going to do an 8-team format, this is something that will at least alleviate some of those issues. Because I know Caroline Fenton is really, really against this. So I had her comments in mind. And so that's why I kept Alabama and LSU, because those are two really big schools.
I agree.
With some of the biggest college football programs, some of the best football environments. Mm-hmm. And you want to keep those two schools playing against each other. Alabama, Auburn as well. So, there is a lot of thinking that goes into this. And again, maybe instead of Florida and Tennessee being an every year rivalry, you can switch that up with Alabama and keep the Kentucky-Florida rivalry going. But, that's not as much of a rivalry either. Mm-hmm. So, it's tough to say.
Kentucky has beat Florida the last 3 years. So let's just.
Last 3 years? Are you sure about that? I thought it was two of the last three. But after that, it was 30 years in a row. So.
Believe me, I know.
But it's all about history. It's all about history.
Okay, but to that point, I do have a question for you. And David, I want you to weigh in on this as well. Because I think, when we talk about these rivalries, and you mentioned Auburn, Georgia, the longest rivalry in college football. A lot of people don't know that. I said that to somebody the other day, and they're like, what? That's the longest rivalry? Not like Alabama, Auburn or something like that, or something that we hear now. Because although we talk so much about these rivalries and these historic rivalries and keeping tradition, and that is so much of what college football is, over the years, programs have drastically changed. Teams have fallen off. I mean, look at Tennessee up until this year, or really the last 2 years when Josh Heupel took over. I mean, their program was not successful. And to say, Tennessee and Alabama, huge rivalry. I get it. The history is there. I get it. And they beat Alabama this year, and it was, incredible. They had one of the best teams in college football this year. That is why, you restore some of these rivalries, because you do get a game like that. But how much do we play in, teams that are currently rivals, say maybe in the last 10 years or even last 7 years, and then rivalries that are just historic but might not be
as prevalent today,
right? I talk about Kentucky, where their program, when Mark Stoops took over, I mean, oh God, he's been there in 2013, I think it was his first year, so this is about his 10th season. I mean, mm-hmm. This program has drastically changed since he took over 10 years ago. I mean, Kentucky wasn't – actually, they used to have a bourbon whiskey rivalry with Tennessee. It was something – and they had a barrel, and it was because, of course, Kentucky bourbon, Tennessee whiskey.
Yeah.
That was their rivalry. But, this program – I mean, the stat you brought up, I mean, they hadn't beaten Florida in Florida in over – it was 40 years. It was insane.
Since the 80s, I think.
Yeah, it was insane. But, as of recent, Florida's program has dropped off a little bit, and mm-hmm. Kentucky's program has shot up a little bit. And, when they had the first win when I was in school there, so it was probably 17 or 18 or one of those years. But, every year it's become more of a rivalry. So how much do you play in, programs kind of on the up and being more competitive, or Tennessee Vanderbilt?
Yeah,
it's tough to weigh what you want to keep and what you don't want.
I'm going to head over to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ben texts in and he says, please, no, Tennessee needs to be in a stronger division. He does not like the fact that I have Tennessee in there with South Carolina, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Maybe it's a little bit too easy for
Tennessee. I will say, though, South Carolina, they're my sleeper team this year. I think I like what Shane Beamer's done with them, beating Tennessee, and then also
Clemson. It's this year, though. It's this year.
Oh,
is South Carolina, like South Carolina, is one of those programs that every once in a while, like I remember, like out of the blue when they got Jadeveon Clowney, like they had like a really really good year and they were one of the best teams in the SEC. The year after he left, like you know they were garbage again. So it's all a give and take. You know, sometimes like Mississippi State has a really good team or Ole Miss has a good team. Like
to be fair for South Carolina, they've won 10 straight. That in that little era with Jadeveon Clowney with
the
old ball
coach. Old ball
coach,
yeah. Spurrier.
Oh,
they
yeah.
Were pretty successful.
They were really good. They were really good with Spurrier. I will give you that. But again, it's been a long time.
Oh yeah, no, agree. But like they weren't like bad that much. Like they were pretty good consistently at that time.
When you got the old ball coach in there.
That's true.
Steve Spurrier.
So I don't know if this would necessarily work. Obviously, you would have to kind of, you know, work out some of the fine details. This is just kind of something that I thought up off the top of my head. Maybe it works, maybe it doesn't. Like, for instance, some of these rivalries, like out-of-division rivals, just don't make sense. Like, I was just really kind of thinking, like, okay, I got to get Georgia-Auburn in there. Like, you know, for me, Florida and Tennessee had to be it because, you know, Tennessee-Alabama just hasn't been, you know, the best rivalry. It was a great game this year, but it hasn't been a great game in a long time. And will it be continuing down the line? We'll have to see. But, you know, regardless, like, some of these teams I just had to pair, like Missouri-Vanderbilt, you know, they're kind of two of the weaker teams in the SEC. They've had some good games the last couple years, so I paired them together. Yeah. You know, Texas-LSU, I paired them because I was like, you know, like, two of the best college football environments, two of the best college football fan bases. Well, let's just put them in together. Like
David
that would
James is
going to
get a penalty because he's doing horns down
all the time. I'm going to be doing it every single game.
Well, and Louisiana and Texas are bordering states.
Yeah, they get players from the same area. Yeah. So I mean, yeah.
So I mean, I definitely see that as you know. Those fan bases are probably kind of right. Like, you know how it is, David.
Oh,
like, in the cafeteria, and everybody's talking about, well, you know, if they played every year, you know, LSU would dominate Texas. Like, those conversations are being had. So, it's going to bring in new rivalries. It's going to bring in new competition. And I just think with the SEC, they've got to find a way to really make sure that some of these historic rivals – you know, stay playing each other on a yearly basis. And if you put them into four divisions, at least some of the most historic games, like your Alabama Auburns, like your, your LSU Alabama, like your
Texas,
Ole
Oklahoma.
Miss, Mississippi State, Texas Oklahoma, like you have got to keep those rivalries on a yearly basis. And at least this four division format does that.
Well, and I mean, we've seen it work in the NFL, right? I mean, I like it. Obviously, you know, whatever way the SEC decides to go, somebody's going to be mad. Some rivalry's not going to be restored. And I'm seeing the text line right now.
That's what I was about
to say.
The
text by John, Michelle, shame on you. Kentucky, Indiana was the bourbon barrel. Kentucky, Tennessee was the beer barrel. John? Thank you for having me.
He gave you a winky face. It came from a good place. He gave you the winky face.
I appreciate that, John. But I mean, something quick before we switch gears here too. I mean, the way it is set up now, I mean, Texas, Georgia has never played at Texas A&M. Think about that.
That's insane.
They joined the SEC in 2012. Georgia has never played in College Station.
That is wild. Why is that the case, though?
Because, you know, it's Georgia's in the East, Aggies are in the West, and, like, the rotation, they're probably, like, the last on, right? And you play once every however many years at one location and then the other. I mean, you can't have things like that, especially with how, you know, good these two programs are. I mean, I would love to see Georgia go play in College Station.
Well,
in
this format that I have, they would at least play there once every 6 years.
Yeah, I mean, you can't have a team going 10 years not playing at one of.
Yeah, because you got to think, like, Georgia has been, you know, a premier program in the SEC ever since Kirby Smart has come and taken over. And A&M is 16. One of the, I would say, top five hardest places to play in all of college football. I mean, though, Aggie fans are nuts. They are absolutely nuts.
They're a cult, bro, for a reason.
No, they are.
They're called a cult for a reason.
Oh, I'm getting so excited for college football fans, or for college football season, guys. I love it. We got SEC Media Days actually coming up here in our backyard in just about a month to get us all ready. And I know that conference realignment, I know that nine conference games, NIL, all of that are going to be huge discussions. And even Texas and Oklahoma joining the SEC are going to be huge topics of conversation when Greg Sankey and the SEC and all the teams come to Nashville late next month. But we're going to switch gears next. I'm going to put Junie on the spot a little bit. I want him to put on his Mike Vrabel hat, and I want you to sell DeAndre Hopkins on why he should become a Tennessee Titan and wear the two-tone blue next year. Coming up next, I'm Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Little Beyonce to come back on this Saturday. Welcome back in, Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Michelle Knezovic, Junie Riddle, David James with hot sauce in his bag. that's a lyric in the song.
Not the biggest Beyonce fan.
She slays.
I know. I'm team Rihanna.
Oh, whoa. Well, this
I mean,
is,
I would have to agree, but I mean, I still love Beyonce.
I don't know. I think Rihanna just goes harder than Beyonce.
She did have a phenomenal Super Bowl performance.
See, Beyonce, I feel like, targets more the female audience, so I understand why females like.
That's fair.
I just think Rihanna, like dudes can get into that too.
Yeah.
For me. And again, whatever your preference in music is, that is just how I feel about it. I'm a Rihanna guy.
That's when you know it's June 10th. I will say, though, I agree with that. And Rihanna did kill it at the Super Bowl. I mean, that performance was pretty insane. She was like hanging from the – she was just all over the place. Incredible. But as I teased before we came into the break, we are really just all over the place today. We're just having fun on Saturday, guys. Junie Riddle will be putting his Mike Vrabel hat on. Putting his Mike Vrabel hat on.
I can't believe you literally put me on the spot with this. This is nothing we talked about before the show. She's literally just like, okay, I'm going into break and I'm just going to say this and Junie's just going to go with it. So if it's awful, just know that this is off the cuff.
I think, though, our conversation that we had on, and we had a couple texts on this on the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. You know, if you're DeAndre Hopkins looking at the Tennessee Titans, looking at the New England Patriots, Mike Vrabel knowing now that he is going to visit with the Patriots, you know, you need to show why your team would be a better landing spot for him. And I understand, you know, you want to see what is his interest level like. Is he just kind of testing the market right now, or is he really interested to get with the team now and be established before training camp, start building some of that chemistry in the building? But, I mean, you were pretty passionate on a lot of the national media members are like, the Patriots, the Patriots, the Patriots. You know, DeAndre Hopkins to the Patriots. Oh, my gosh, Bill Belichick, yada, yada, all that stuff. You know, relating offensive coordinator with his former coach in Houston and all that stuff. But, I mean, let's be real. What has Mac Jones and Bill Belichick really done there in the last couple of years? And what has that franchise done ever since Tom Brady left in 2019? So why would you think that DeAndre Hopkins would be a great fit here? What would be your pitch on why he should join the Tennessee Titans?
So first, if I'm Mike Vrabel, I
– Buff up the chest, Junie. Buff up the chest.
If I'm Mike Vrabel, I'm telling DeAndre Hopkins this. Listen, DeAndre, you really want to go up there and play for Bill? You want to go be in that locker room? Players come out all the time saying how toxic of a locker room that is and how strict it is. Listen, I've been a part of it. He let me go. He traded me to Kansas City. I won 3 Super Bowls there. I was one of the best players. I was one of the reasons why. And he threw me off to the side. You really want to go up there and have no fun? Absolutely not. Guess what? We have Derrick Henry. Derrick Henry behind the worst offensive line in the league, which we revamped this offseason, ran for 1,500 yards. Do you know what defenses do to a guy that can run for 1,500 yards behind the worst offensive line in the league? They put 8 and 9 guys in the box. Imagine, DeAndre, everybody thinks you're washed. Nobody thinks you have it. Everybody's trying to pay you $3, $2, $1 million a year because they think that that's what you're worth. Well, we're going to pay you more. And not only are we going to pay you more, but you are going to see defenses with one-on-one matchups more than anybody else in the league because of who we have in the backfield. Let's talk about quarterback. You want to go play for Mac Jones? Mac Jones. Let's be real. Come on. He got drafted because he played for Alabama and Nick Saban, okay? He's used to having stacked rosters, and guess what? New England's roster is not as good as us here in Tennessee. Since Tom Brady's left, what have they done? Because I can tell you this, we led the league in injuries the other year and had the most players on our roster, 91 players, DeAndre, and we were still the number one seed in the AFC. Now, you also said this. You said you wanted to play for a team with a good defense. Well, guess what? Our defense last year was the number one defense in stopping the run. And we dealt with injuries all year long, DeAndre, all year long. This team is going to be healthier. This team is revamped. And we got young offensive pieces that could use you as a leader. Now, everybody's doubting you. If you come here to Tennessee and play in one of the weakest divisions, we have an opportunity with you to compete with the Jacksonville Jaguars. You really think if you go over there to New England that you're going to compete with Aaron Rodgers and the Jets in their top 5 defense from last year? You think you're going to compete with the Buffalo Bills who have dominated that division? Or the Miami Dolphins that have, you know, wide receivers out the wazoo And they've really beefed up their roster.
And probably getting Dalvin Cook.
I don't think so. New England doesn't have a shot. At least we give you a shot, and we're going to pay you more than Kansas City and Buffalo. What do you say, DeAndre? Come be a Tennessee Titan. Come help us get one last run, the last dance for the Tennessee Titans to go out and win the AFC South and compete for the Super Bowl for one last year. What do you say?
Woo!
I'm convinced.
Judy Riddle.
Right there. You put all of that out there in front of him. And again, my Mike Vrabel impression was awful. I can't do his
voice. Best radio in the books right here.
I can't do his voice, all right? And Mike Vrabel's voice is very distinct. I can't do it. But either way, it is night and day. The Tennessee Titans have the better quarterback, the better running back, the better division, and he's going to get better looks and a better opportunity to win the division here than he would playing for the New England Patriots. That is easily the reason what Mike Vrabel has to sell him on, and not even to mention, and I didn't even get into it, the Bill O'Brien as the coach/GM that got rid of him in a year that the Houston Texans probably had their best year ever.
Yep.
And he traded him for a second-round pick when he was considered to be a top three wide receiver in the league, and for David freaking Johnson. Yeah. It's awful.
That's like all you have to say.
You want to go play for that guy again, and not only that, be under Bill Belichick, who by all accounts, the locker room, the amount of fun that you have, it's just not there. And does a veteran on the tail end, the back nine of his career, want to go play in an environment like that when they genuinely don't have a chance? I say this. The Titans, as they're constructed, I don't give them much of a chance. You add DeAndre Hopkins, I am definitely swaying that opinion and putting them in that conversation.
You add DeAndre Hopkins, I believe, you know, we're talking about could be a similar situation last year, week 18, for the division with the Jaguars. Jaguars do have a number one. They do have a first-place schedule. You know, that's something to definitely throw out there. Their schedule will be harder this year. You know what I thought was interesting, and I don't have the stats right off the top of my head, but our friend Easton Fries from Broadway Media Sports, he tweeted out something the other day, and it showed, you know, last year the injuries on each team. And it showed how, you know, the Tennessee Titans, we know their injury history, the worst in the league by far. I'm not getting into that right now because we already know the song and dance.
I think they led the league in both the last 2 years in injuries and the amount of players they needed to fill out their roster that year.
Well, on the other end, the Jacksonville Jaguars were so incredibly healthy. They, like, led the league by, like a pretty big margin. It was a graph. And they were really, really healthy, you know, and I don't want to say, you know, like, but the reality is it's football and the likelihood of your team being that healthy every single year is rare. It is rare. I'm sure it's more likely than not, you know, you have one of your most impactful players be out a game or two. It's very, very rare. That's why when we were talking about Kevin Byard and the fact that he's played every single game here is so incredibly significant. But adding a guy like DeAndre Hopkins to this offense would be like us talking about last year, getting a guy like Treylon Burks to complement A.J. Brown and talking about what an offense would look like that. You know, DeAndre Hopkins is a proven elite wide receiver like A.J. Brown was. And we've already seen a jump from Treylon Burks just by the way he's carrying himself, the way he looks. I understand we need to see what it looks like on practice. He's had some big contested catches in practice, but what does it look like on Sundays? I believe adding a guy like DeAndre Hopkins will help increase Treylon Burks' production. It'll help take a weight off of his shoulders so he won't be doubled. And, Junior, your point on stacking the box against Derrick Henry, I mean, DeAndre Hopkins is probably one of the best one-on-one catchers in the league.
Oh, 100%. I mean, that's his bread and butter. He doesn't use speed to make receptions. He is very good at high-pointing the ball, jumping at the right time, and he has some of the best hands and body control in the entire NFL. And let's not even – I don't want to fail to mention this, and I know we got to go to break here soon. But everyone's talking about what it's going to do for DeAndre and Treylon Burks. But what I would like to highlight is what it's going to do for the middle of the field for my X factor that I said on the show yesterday with Chase and Michelle, for a guy like Kyle Phillips, for a tight end that we expect to have a breakout season in Chig Okonkwo. I think both of those guys, having Traylon and DeAndre on the outside, is going to open up the middle of the field a lot and let those guys eat as well. It just absolutely changes the dynamic of this offense. And when you're really relying heavily on 3 second-year players on the offensive side to be your playmakers, having a veteran like that come in and with his repertoire of skill, it's just going to completely open up this offense to a completely new level. And it just immediately changes my perception of this Titans team. Because my number one thing is, I don't think they can score with some of these offenses that are in the AFC. With DeAndre Hopkins and what that will open up with what they already have, that just completely changes my mind about this team.
It makes a lot of sense, Junie. It makes a lot of sense for him to join this team. But I do believe, and it's something we've talked about, DeAndre Hopkins is going to go to the team that pays him. Who is going to give him that contract? Is the OBJ contract really the floor for him? And how would you feel looking at the way the Tennessee Titans roster is constructed, looking at the cap, how would you feel paying him that amount of money? We're going to get into the financial aspect on the other side. And Junie needs to say something about Will Levis and Ryan Tannehill. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. Chase and Michelle, Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3, the Game. Michelle Knezevic, Junie Riddle, David James. Happy Saturday, Nashville. It is very confusing when you host a show called Chase and Michelle, sometimes with Junie Riddle, and then also Michelle and Junie. And we were just talking about that. I hope I made people laugh this morning. This is Michelle and Junie, which is every Saturday from 9 to 11. Chase and Michelle is Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, sometimes featuring Junie Riddle. Discussing the DeAndre Hopkins situation, I want to quickly get into the financial aspect of things and what would a contract look for him. Charles Robinson came on with us on Thursday discussing and what he's hearing from around the league that the OBJ contract, 1 year, $15 million from the Ravens and incentives up to $18 million a year for him would be the base DeAndre Hopkins is looking at. I think if you look at the two guys and if you were to tell me who would you rather pay, I'm taking DeAndre Hopkins just for the sole fact of OBJ coming off that second ACL tear, hasn't played in a year. It's concerning. I understand when he was a huge part of the Rams winning that Super Bowl and getting to that Super Bowl. He was great when he was on that team. What was that? Two years ago now. But second ACL tear, a year, it does concern me. And looking at Odell's always been a speedster as well, right? And we've talked about how DeAndre Hopkins, you know, when you get up there in age, because they're about the same age, when you get that up there in age, what he brings to the table is his ability to have separation, his ability to have sticky hands and make any catch. I mean, I was watching just some highlights of him, just getting kind of excited because I do believe that this would just be such an exciting player to cover and to watch at every Titans game, in addition to, you know, some of the other threats that they have. But it's just the type of player he is. He's elite. He's a game changer. You add him to any offense, he will, you know, create opportunities and he'll be a game changer. I mean, that's really all you got to say. And I would choose him over OBJ. But, you know, you look at the cap space right now, the Tennessee Titans have $7.9 million in cap. That's, you can do things with it. I mean, for instance, the Ravens, they are paying OBJ. I think it's a $13 million signing bonus. So they give that to him up front. The only portion of it that counts against the cap is about $2 million a year or
1.1.
1.1 a year. So that will go against the cap. So as far as cap space, it's 1.1.
And then it's 2.7 in incentives.
So, you know, when we talk about manipulating the cap, those are things that you could do. So say, you know, you want to use the 7.9 in the cap space for him. You want to give him a $8 million signing bonus or whatever it may be, depending on how much you want to give him. If I'm looking at this, I'm thinking 1 year, $10 million, incentives up to 16.
If OBJ has his incentives up to 18.
Yeah, I know.
In order to do this, and I think this is a really good tweet as well that I saw, Mike Herndon, who writes for PaulKarski, .com, he said the easiest way for the Titans to create cap space to sign DeAndre Hopkins is to restructure Landry's deal. A restructure would create $10.44 million in 2023 cap space at the cost of $3.48 million of cap space in each of 2024, 25, and 26. Tennessee currently has $93.8 million in cap space projected for next year because, you know, like I said, Ryan Tannehill, uh-huh. Derrick Henry,
even Kevin Byard's cap isn't that high next year.
They're all falling off the books. And again, yeah, Kevin Byard's cap hit this year is not going to be as much as it is next year. So with all of that being said, if you restructure Harold Landry's deal, you know, you can free up some space. I would try and do like something kind of like 8-8. You still want to kind of have some cap to be able to manipulate, but also you want to get the incentives up to $8 million. So maybe not 8-8, maybe like 8-10. Like I would try and get it to where, you know, $8 million going towards the cap, maybe an $8 million signing bonus to immediately just kind of replenish the funds and do like, you know, maybe $3 or $4 million in incentives for him to reach to. So that would be something that I would do to try and get him a little bit over what OBJ is, because again, OBJ is going to be making $15 million. If you do an $8 million signing bonus, which doesn't go towards the cap, you free up enough cap space to where you're almost at $10.5 to $11 million. You still have maybe roughly $2.5 to $3 million in cap space. And you're also getting it to where he has the potential to make more than what OBJ is. Because to your point, and I agree with you, that if you're asking who I would rather have at this stage in their career, I would rather have DeAndre Hopkins because, you know, his worst injury was an MCL tear, which on average is a 6-week recovery. Mm-hmm. OBJ, same age, roughly, and he's been through two ACLs and didn't even play all last year. So you've got to somewhat give him more than that just because of where the Ravens set that market.
No, I agree with that. And I think that, you know, because the Ravens set that market, that is the base of what he will be looking for. So are the Tennessee Titans willing to write the check? Right? I mean, that's what it comes down to. We talk so much about the free agents that they signed this offseason, and the way we described it was they made smart shopping decisions. They made smart financial decisions. Nothing flashy, nothing big. You didn't whip out the checkbook and go get an Orlando Brown Jr., a guy who would cost a lot. You got an Andre Dillard on a shorter term, you know, not as expensive deal. You got a Brunskill, you got an Arden Key, Azeez Al-Shaair, guys who can be, you know, quality pieces, but you're not paying a lot for them. Okay, well, this is a guy you do. This is a guy who you whip out the checkbook. It's June 10th right now because of the impact he could have to this offense.
Absolutely. So, and again, he is worth it to the point because, you know, with how the second half of the season went, again, you lost the division because of injury. Mm-hmm. I'm not denying that whatsoever.
Yeah.
But we also saw Jacksonville, they figured things out. Trevor Lawrence figured it out. And again, it was his first year with Doug Peterson. And Doug Peterson, in my opinion, is one of the best offensive minds in the game.
Agreed.
Again, he won a Super Bowl with Nick Foles. So with that being said, you can only expect another offseason and the addition of Calvin Ridley, and we've already been hearing how well he's been doing early, that they're only going to get better. In order for you to compete and take that next step with the Jaguars, because right now I think they are two steps ahead of you rather than one, mm-hmm. the way they were at the end of last year, getting a guy like this helps you play catch-up and gives you a chance. I truly believe this is the difference between being in the playoff conversation and not.
And, you know, you look at this team, too, and it's the question of rebuild, reset. Well, they're not rebuilding. You still have Tannehill, Byard, Derrick Henry. But the ability to also have a young, promising quarterback who you eventually, depending on how this season goes, could see some field time. Let's say they don't get D-Hop. How much do you let Will Levis play this year?
So, again, and I've caught a lot of flack from this.
I know you have, and that's why I set it up this way.
The text line and Caroline and Joe have also mentioned it on their respective shows.
Sorry, really quick. I just will say, I don't know if the point, like everybody's thinking that you're saying he should start over him. That's not the premise.
No, it's not the premise. It's not the premise. The premise of it is that the Titans and the way they view themselves and the way that the local media views the Tennessee Titans, I feel like I'm not there where they are. They see this team as, oh, well, they were right there with Jacksonville at the end of last year. Well, I am anticipating Jacksonville to be a little bit better than they were last year. I think they're taking that step as a team, mm-hmm. as an organization. They have the coach, and they have the quarterback. So right now, I'm saying as the Titans currently stand, and this does not include DeAndre Hopkins. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Hopkins gets signed. It is a last dance. It is a go-for-it year for this Tennessee Titans team. But as it stands right now, if they don't get D-Hop, I am saying that maybe getting Will Levis in the mix sometime this year, likely at the bye week when the schedule starts to ease up a little bit and you get through it, I think that maybe working for the future if you have a rough start is very, very important for them to be able to do. And I think that it will only help them because Trevor Lawrence is only going to get better. The other two rookie quarterbacks are going to be playing early and mm-hmm. getting that experience. I think Will Levis, being the future of this team, you trade up to the 33rd overall pick, it only makes sense to go to him if, you know, things start out really rough and Jacksonville is the team that I expect them to be.
It's going to be exciting. It's only June 10th right now, and training camp is about 6 weeks away. We have got a lot of time to talk Will Levis, to talk DeAndre Hopkins, unless something magical happens this weekend here in Nashville. CMA Fest. I mean, what better weekend to come to Nashville if you're DeAndre Hopkins? It'll be exciting. We will keep you updated if there's any new news regarding the DeAndre Hopkins situation and the Tennessee Titans. Coming up next, Junie and I are going to put a bow on things. And don't you worry, Nick Fraser has sent in his NSC parlay, which has been very successful. So we'll make sure to hit on that and our best bets of the weekend. Coming up next on Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 in the Game Nashville app. It's that time every Saturday at 10:45. Pulling out our Superbook Sports app, and Junie and I are going to give you our picks of the weekend with a little Dolly Parton in the background. Thanks to David James here with us.
That's a goated song.
Oh, yes. Goated song.
I love Jolene.
I love Dolly Parton. She's the best.
I was at an establishment last night that may have been on a street called Broadway, and there was a little 9 to 5 by Dolly Parton playing. That's a good one, too. Working 9 to 5. Love that one. Dolly Parton, the queen of Nashville and country music.
The queen of Tennessee.
There you go. There you go. The queen of Tennessee. But we hopefully will help you make a little money this weekend. We are going to take a look at some of the games we've got. Unfortunately, the Miami Heat dropped last night. I really worry for them moving forward in this series, Junie and David. I think that Denver will close it out in five back home in Denver. They just looked monstrous last night. I mean, and you mentioned it, Junie, on Friday when you were hosting with me, that, you know, other than a fourth quarter comeback from the Heat.
A miraculous one at
that. To be the first team to just win a game in Denver in the postseason, it was going to be a tall task. Even coming back home to beat this Denver team, just because of how lethal they've been, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray performing at such a high level. Do you know that they are the only two players in NBA postseason to both record a 30-point triple-double?
Yes. No, I definitely saw that.
Which is kind of crazy. I mean, you think about some of the dynamic duos we've seen, right? I mean, LeBron, D-Wade, Shaq, Kobe, you know, well, Michael, Pippen.
It's different because, you know, a lot of those duos aren't necessarily facilitators like both of these players are. I mean, we talk about Jokic being the best passing big man
100%.
That we've ever seen, and you're talking about Jamal Murray, who is a point guard. So, you know, naturally he's going to have games where he's, you know, facilitating the ball at a high level. Even last night, he wasn't playing that well. He still had 15 and 12 assists. So, you know, Jamal Murray, you know, although he wasn't shooting the ball well, only 5 of 17 mm-hmm. from the floor, he still was facilitating the ball and doing his job. And, you know, also shout out to Aaron Gordon. Aaron Gordon played out of his
27
mind
points.
Last
big
night.
Game for him.
3 of 4 from three. That's what really kind of blew me away. Like, I know that he's worked on his perimeter shot, but the fact, you know, that was huge. He had some good plays. And also, my favorite play that I've seen in watching the Nuggets this playoff is when Jokic backs it up and it looks like he's about to just kind of like kind of toss it in like how he normally does.
His hook.
But it's actually a lob to Aaron Gordon on the backside. That is so awesome to me. Nuggets are a fun team to watch.
They are.
And normally I'm all for the underdog. And I would probably be rooting for the Heat if it was anybody else, but Denver has always been such a competitive organization in the NBA.
Yeah.
And for them to finally be here, their first finals, and have a guy like Jokic who's so fun to watch, I'm going to be happy for them if they do wind up pulling this out, especially if it's in game five in front of their home fans. I think that would be storybook for me.
No, I agree. I mean, and just hearing Jokic in any of his media availability or anything about him, I mean, he's just a fun guy to root for, right? We talk about the Taco Bell commercial when he got drafted, and it just was a little ticker on the bottom, and it said, drafted in the second round, Nikola Jokic. I mean, and the player he has become, one of the faces of really the NBA these last couple of years with his MVP seasons, but the knock on him. And I'm just remembering around the MVP conversation, whether it was him or Joel Embiid. And I mean, if postseason counted, I mean, Jokic is my MVP in the book. I thought it was a close one for regular season. But
to touch on this really quickly, though, I mean, what a great past decade for Denver sports. You know, the Broncos and Peyton Manning's last year won the Super Bowl in the 2015. The Super Bowl was in 2016. So, and then also the Avalanche winning the Stanley Cup. And now the Nuggets, if they pull this out, I mean, that's three of your four sports teams that have won championships in the last decade. So if you're a Denver fan, this is a great time to be watching sports out in the Colorado Mountains. So
in the Mile
it's
High
good for
City.
Them. Good for them, man.
Well, and to your point, I was talking to Nick Kieser about this. The way that the Denver Nuggets and the Colorado Avalanche both surged through the playoffs, whether it was the Avs last year or the Nuggets this year, I mean, just complete dominant performances. I think the Avs, I mean, they had two sweeps, one being the Preds, and they swept another team, which I can't think of off the top of my head. But, you know, their surge to the Stanley Cup Finals was so dominant. And, I mean, that's so similar to the Denver Nuggets right now.
I think Denver's only lost four games. They let up one against the T-Wolves, two against the Suns, and then they swept the Lakers and lost one to the Heat. So only four losses so far in this playoff. So if they get that done, I mean, you're talking about one of the better runs in the playoffs in NBA history and going through the tough Western Conference. I mean,
yes.
it speaks volumes for what they've done. I mean, seriously, even in the Lakers sweep, like the Lakers were playing ultra
great
well
and
who they had to go through the Grizzlies and Warriors. You know, the fact that they dominated them so easily in the Western Conference Finals, this Nuggets team will be pretty historic with all the pieces that have stepped up in numerous games in this playoff. So it's looking like they're going to close it out. So great run by Denver if they wind up doing it in front of their home fans.
It must be the altitude, right?
Has to be.
It must be the altitude for everybody up in Denver. But let's go to NHL playoffs tonight. Tonight we got the Golden Knights and the Florida Panthers. Matthew Tkachuk was able to send it into overtime for game three. The Panthers.
Clutch.
Yes, there you go. The Panthers ended up winning 3-2, got their first win of the series. Golden Knights still up 2-1. Game four in Florida tonight. I'm going Florida Panthers. I love what I saw from Matthew Tkachuk in the offense in game three. I think that's kind of the little oomph they needed in some confidence just regarding their offense. And I think that it's they get a big win in Florida, tie up this thing. And I'm going to take the over 5.5.
I'm with the over as well. And I had brought this up yesterday how, you know, he was missing a lot of his shifts in the first and second period of the game the other night, which really kind of held them back. But obviously, you know, stuck through it, played out through the injury that he was dealing with, and obviously saved the day in the third period to send it to OT, and they wound up winning. So I think this is going to be a bit of a more high scoring game, like mm-hmm. you said. I'm on the Panthers as well. I think they tie this and make this a competitive series.
David, you got anybody?
Oh, I got the Panthers. I mean, playing in Miami, you got to.
Mm-hmm. They Florida needs a win, especially after last night. We'll pick game five in Denver. It's not for 2 days, so it'll be on Monday. Mm-hmm. Nuggets a 9-point favorite.
9-point favorite. I'm going to take the Heat on the points. Yeah. I think the Nuggets close it out. That is hard to say because, I mean, they did just really dismantle them the past two games in Miami. So it's hard to say. I don't know. I just – the way Jimmy Butler plays in the fourth quarter and the way he turns it up, the way he leads the team, like even last night, cutting it to, you know, 8 points, seven mm-hmm. points at times. You know, I always thought that there was a chance that they could pull in, even with Jokic getting in foul trouble. So I'm gonna take the Heat just because it's a closeout game. I got a feeling they're gonna keep it close, but I think the Nuggets wind up winning.
David,
I mean, I gotta go with Nikola Jokic. I mean, my NBA fantasy team was called the Serbian Dak Jokic, so have to go with him.
Okay, are you
on the line on the points? Are you taking the points?
Oh yeah, on the points.
Okay,
yeah.
So you're taking the points. This one's really tough for me because, you know, I think about Eric Spoelstra, Jimmy Butler, and just the heart and soul of this Heat team, of them being the underdog, and they really thrive under this underdog mentality. I'm gonna take them plus the 9. I think though Denver will close it out in 5, but my heart is hoping that we get to a game 6. My heart is hoping for that. Also, guys, we will touch quickly on the college baseball series. So today we've got Southern Miss and Tennessee. I don't see a line up currently, but we'll just do the series, best 2 out of 3. I'm actually picking Southern Miss to win this series. Tennessee's had some struggles offensively this year, and especially not having the home field advantage, I think is going to hurt them. So give me Southern Miss. Also, just the fact of it's in Hattiesburg, their coach is retiring this year. This team has been very successful, and don't count them out just because they're a small school. They've been very successful. So I'm going to take Southern Miss to win the series.
I'm going to say what I said yesterday. I think Southern Miss takes game one, but Tennessee will bounce back and win games 2 and 3, and they will move on to Omaha.
Okay.
I hate saying this, but I think Tennessee can win too.
There you go. And of course, we have to do it because we got David James in today. LSU and Kentucky. LSU, one of the hottest baseball teams in the country right now. I'm picking with my heart today, and I don't care. I'm picking Kentucky.
Yeah, bring the brooms out because LSU's going to mop the floor with Kentucky.
Sweep city.
So we got some Go Tigers here. And then, of course, like we like to do every Saturday to close the show, Nick Fraser not here, but he texted in his NSC parlay. He is putting $10 on a Nashville SC draw over 6.5 corners. Hani Mukhtar to have 3 or more shots on target. And Jacob Schaffelberg to have 2 or more shots on target. $10, you get about a $5.50 payout for that. So that is his NSC parlay. Nashville, enjoy CMA Fest. Enjoy some music. Enjoy a great weekend. Happy to hang out with you today. Michelle and Junie, David James joined us today. Always a pleasure. Back at 6 a.m. on Monday for Robbie and Rex Road. Have a great weekend. We are out. Michelle and Junie, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.